ADS CFT correspondents understand what, how to see behind the horizon, more specifically, what in the gauge theory will tell us about physics behind the horizon. And we are specifically going to be using discussing this in the context of D-brain probes, of the D3 brain probes, which are dual to taking the gauge theory out in the Coulomb branch. Thus the title, and as you might have guessed from the title, this is work done in collaboration with Eva Silverstein and Gary Horowitz, and work we've done so far, and it's work we're continuing to think about, although I won't have much to say about new work today. So I'll start by way of some introduction, just talking about the problem of seeing behind the horizon in ADS-CFT and its relation to sort of general proposed properties of black holes. I'll then talk about a specific construction within ADS-CFT, where we start with what looks to be some sort of holographic cosmology, but then it actually turns out to be a black hole. And then I'll study the transformation between these two pictures in some detail in the context of D-brain probes. And then I'll talk more generally. The particular class of the variant of ADS-CFT we look at has some, the field theory and the set of black holes has some interesting structure, which might bear on, in particular, in studying the singularity. So I'll spend some time talking about that, depending on how much time is left. And then I'll conclude. OK, so first, by way of introduction, I want just to review some aspects of what's known as black hole complementarity. So let's consider, for example, a large black hole, which may form from some collapse scenario. And the black hole is very, very large enough so that the curvature near the horizon is fairly weak. And it, the curvature remains weak well within the horizon until you approach the singularity. So if I have an observer, this fellow here, which falls in to the horizon, it remains this observer. This observer is described by some quantum state, which remains semi-classical until, presumably, until that observer gets fairly close to the singularity. On the other hand, an external observer sees something very different. An external observer sees the black hole evaporate via long wavelength thermal Hawking radiation. And an infalling observer that falls into the black hole will appear to get cooked near the horizon and re-emitted further as Hawking radiation. And on the one hand, all the information about unitarity tells us that all the information about the formation of the black hole and things falling into the black hole should come out in the Hawking radiation. And that information looks very, does not reflect the sort of semi-classical nature of the what the infalling observer sees very well. So the question is, what's the map between these two pictures of the quantum state? So we want to ask this in particular in the context of the ADS-CFT correspondence, which to date has mostly been best adapted to asking questions outside the horizon. So here is the Penrose diagram for an ADS-5 black hole, which is described as a four-dimensional gauge theory at finite temperature, where the temperature is related to the mass. For an eternal black hole, in fact, we describe this finite temperature gauge theory by having two copies of the gauge theory, which are in some sort of correlated state, which means that observers' observations made in one copy of the gauge theory, because of this correlation, these observations are described by a thermal density matrix. But in this picture, the gauge theory time is most is believed to be the Schwarzschild time, the time seen by a Schwarzschild observer. And according to Schwarzschild time, it takes, as you can just see from this Penrose diagram, here are foliations of constant Schwarzschild time surfaces, and the Schwarzschild time reaches infinity at the horizon. So infalling observers appear to take an infinite amount of time to reach the horizon. And the gauge theory description is to believe one where I have some excitation. The excitation spreads dual to the infalling observer moving in to the interior of ADS and thermalizes as it reaches the horizon. So the question is then, what's the, so this, on the one hand, Yeah, I didn't know the red would be so hard. I apologize. On the one hand, on the one hand, this is a good description of physics outside the horizon. On the other hand, it's supposed to be related to physics inside of the horizon. So how do you see that from the point of view of the gauge theory? And a piece of that question would be, at the long run, how do you see that? How do you understand the singularity from the point of view of the gauge theory? Now, there was very interesting work by Krausiger and Schenker and Fedkowski and company. Oh, boy. Really. So now you all can go to sleep. There's no backlights. The fluorescent lights? Which one? I see. Bottom one? There we go. Is that good? Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry about the red. I didn't expect this. I almost always give blackboard talks. One mistake. The question is, there was interesting work by Fedkowski and company and by Krausiger and Schenker using this thermal field level picture to look at correlation functions between the two copies. It's an interesting question how what they see is related to our work, but I don't have anything to say about it yet. It's not totally clear what the field theory does. I think if you, we'll talk a bit about that later. This has certainly been the lore so far. What I'll argue is that, I'll tell you what I think choosing different time slices means down the line, that it's related to some sort of gauge, choice of gauge. Time slicing, the Schwarzschild time slicing is, among other things, time reversal invariant. And that if you have a choice of gauge which respects that, then I would expect it has to do with the time slicing like this. It's also just matches what we see physically. The sort of process of thermalization in infinite time sort of is in keeping with what a Schwarzschild observer sees. So that's my back guess. But indeed, there should be, we'll argue that it's not a priori clear which slicing you get. So let me come back, ask again later on. So to attack this, I want to talk about a particular setup, which I call a holographic cosmology. This actually was something that my collaborators and I studied for some other reason in a previous paper, but which we then returned to. And the basic instruction is as follows. Consider anti-de Sitter space in Poincaré coordinates. So this is the Penrose diagram for eternal anti-de Sitter. These are antipodal points on the S3. The Poincaré coordinates involves a particular slice with this metric here. And this is R sub p. These the radial direction of Poincaré coordinates. And as it goes to infinity, which is the boundary, the geometry is asymptotically just R4. So ADS CFT in the Poincaré patch is dual to field 3 living on R4. Now, what I'm going to do is first take this a patch of R4, which is described as the backwards light cone of a point, and foliate it with hyperbolic slices. This is a standard foliation of R4. It's completely flat. It just covers a piece, and it's described by a different time scale here. This d sigma squared is the metric on the hyperbolic slices, and it looks like the volume of these slices goes to zero here. Now, so far with the slicing, this apparent singularity is simply an apparent singularity. And so this is just a foliation of this piece. What we can do, however, is orbifold with respect to some discrete isometry along these hyperbolic slices. And in particular, we can choose an isometry such that the orbifold is compact. Now I have a compact spatial slice, which I'll describe that compact hyperbolic free manifold by sigma. Now I have a compact spatial slice, which is going to zero volume. And this is an honest to God singularity. And when I do this, the final metric in the bulk is just this cosmological four manifold with this radial factor out front. And because now, as I go out to the boundary, the geometry is conformally equivalent to this cosmology, it's natural to claim that the dual gauge theory lives on the collapsing cone metric, which you can't quite see here, but which is just this. So the claim is that this patch here, which has an orbifold singularity here, is well described by gauge theory on this collapsing cone metric. That's our starting point. And so this is something we were interested in for other reasons. This when string theory on small hyperbolic spaces seems to have many more an increasing number of degrees of freedom as the volume of the hyperbolic spaces gets small, and that was our initial interest. But we realized also that this was a presentation which seemed to allow us to look at the singularity, and so we started thinking about it more. Yes. It's essentially a Milne system. It's you would have to worry about it. In the end, what I'm done at the end of the day, so this is a way to see inside the horizon. It was a presentation of the gauge theory to see behind the horizon. But essentially a simple conformal, this point at infinity is, this point at the origin is really sort of a point at infinity, and this conformal transformation pushes it off to infinity. As long as you understand it in that way, that's right. So. Okay, so I'll just mention in passing, this is similar in spirit to other time-dependent quantum field theories, other attempts to look, there is a series of attempts to look at the singularity, which had to do with having some time-dependent dilaton or some time-dependent space-time on which the gauge theory lived. It is a bit distinct from other examples of unstable quantum field theories which were used to study the singularity. The basic difference is that for us, as we'll argue as we go along, the singularity is somehow most naturally associated with strong infrared dynamics in the field theory rather than the ultraviolet. And other descriptions, particularly by these authors, the singularity is associated with the scalar fields running off to infinity, which I would associate with the ultraviolet of the theory. Here it has to do with the scalar field sitting near the origin of moduli space. As sort of a crude argument, the D3, so let's consider this particular space-time. This is just an orbifolding of Poincaré coordinates, and in Poincaré coordinates, brains moving it on along constant radius, and Poincaré coordinates are good solutions to the deep brain equations of motion. And that remains true in our example. So I can study D3 brains at constant Poincaré radius. W bosons stretched between two of them are disappearing into the horizon, have a mass which is constant in time. On the other hand, the momentum, the Klitzek-Klein momentum along the spatial compact spatial slices grows as I go towards the singularity because the volume of the space is getting small. And so a good dimensionless ratio is the ratio of the W mass to the Klitzek-Klein mass, which is going to zero. There's a similar story, as we'll argue later, in this conformally transformed picture. But the upshot is the singularity seems to be associated with the infrared. Now, it's unclear a priori if the quantum field theory is well defined here, but as we'll, based on what I just, my answer to Ben, and as we'll see, in the long run, this apparent singularity is well defined, and it's sort of a red herring. We can come up with another presentation which also goes behind the horizon, which is better defined. Okay. So that's the holographic cosmology, and what we had not realized when we first wrote this down, but as was pointed out to us later, this apparent cosmology is in fact a piece of a black hole space-time. And in particular, if you perform this coordinate transformation here, the metric looks like this. Here, this looks almost like the metric for ADS, except this in ADS, this minus sign is a plus sign. But now this is a black hole. The horizon happens when f of r vanishes, when r is of order L. L here is the ADS radius. It's part of a class of black holes which Amparan first studied and called topological black holes. These black holes have, as you can see from this piece of the metric here, this is the metric on compact hyperbolic space. So these black holes have compact negatively curved horizons. In this frame, it's a black hole at finite temperature. It has a horizon area which is roughly proportional to the cube of the ADS radius. The entropy is of order n squared. According to the dual gauge theory description. And we expect that the dual of this will be a gauge theory on a compact hyperbolic space times time at some temperature, which is roughly the inverse radius of the compact hyperbolic space related to this temperature in the bulk. So you might have worried about the singularity here at the origin, whether this was a reasonable thing to do, whether this orbital folding made sense, whether it came from some decoupled field theory. But at least it appears it's there's another presentation where you're looking at field theory on some compact hyperbolic space, which is a well-defined theory. It's a slightly subtle theory, but it is, in fact, a well-defined theory. And it's something you can study. So that's interesting in and of itself. But also, now I seem to have two different descriptions. One description seems to see outside the black hole. One description sees inside the black hole. So this is some hint about what kind of that there are ways within the field theory to transform between something, a presentation of the gauge theory, which describes infalling observers, and one which describes Schwarzschild observers. Yeah, so let's talk about that. There's various transformations you can do. And the thing which will see the Schwarzschild space and will not quite be a conformal transformation. The conformal transformation is something you can do. So we'll talk about the difference between those as we go. Yes, but it's still well-defined. We'll talk about that also. It's a mild instability. It takes infinite time to get to infinite distance in field space. And you can design, there are examples of these compact hyperbolic spaces where only the zero mode is unstable. Typically, it's only the zero mode and a few Kluze Klein modes which are unstable. But these instabilities take an infinite time to develop. So any finite, you can compute transition amplitudes in any finite time process without worrying about infinities. There's no ground state, though. So yeah, it's a much harder thing. OK, so it is indeed true, as Ben has asked, that there is a conformal transformation which takes the collapsing cone to the cylinder. I just do first a reparameterization of my time variable. So this is Poincaré time. This is Schwarzschild time. This goes from minus infinity to 0. T goes from minus infinity to infinity. And then I do a conformal transformation of this cone to get a nice static cylinder metric. And this seems to map quantum field theory observers describing quantum field theory variables describing Schwarzschild observers to quantum field theory variables describing infalling observers. On the other hand, I will argue in a bit that the conformal transformation isn't quite enough to map between these two pictures. But it at least appears, certainly the gauge theory on this and on this seems to be related. So the question is now, how does this map act on bulk probes? And in the long run, also we want to know whether this can be generalized to other black holes where we might not have a nice collapsing cone description like this. Yeah, the scalar fields and, what I'm going to claim is that there will be certain variables in a certain gauge which are good for describing, say, deep vein probes and Schwarzschild coordinates, and different variables which are good for describing deep vein probes. And so there will be a choice of, you know, of coordinates in field space and a choice of gauge. And stuff like that. Yeah, yeah.
The thing corresponding to the deep three brain that just sits there.
That's a solution.
In the collapsing
cone.
Now, are you saying, I would say, well, fine, I can do a conformal transformation on that, and then I'll have that thing in the other picture.
Let's talk about the conformal transformation later. I will go into this. So now I want to talk about the transformation of these field theory variables, in particular for the example of a D3 ring probe. So I'm going to consider first n equals 4 supereating nils on this compact hyperbolic space times time at some finite temperature. We'll talk about the full Yang-Mills degrees of freedom down the line. In particular, it's, as was pointed out, that there is an instability due to the negative curvature. I want to talk about, I first want to discuss a single D3 grain probe, which is moving in, moving through the space-time, moving in R and T, where these are the Schwarzschild coordinates, and wrapping the compact hyperbolic space. So I'm not going to worry for now about fluctuations in the direction of the compact hyperbolic space. It will also be sitting at a point on the S5. I'm going to ignore dynamics in the S5.
So the string theory and the ADS-C T-duality tells us that the deep, well, string theory tells us that the probe dynamics is described by the DBI action. There's this this here, which is
the space-time area, or the, sorry, yeah, the world volume of the D3 brain, and then there's this coupling to the Ramon-Ramon 4 form. And this is a general manifestly coordinate variant description, but if I gauge fix the world volume time to be equal to the Schwarzschild time, I'm just going to consider motion. I'm not going to worry about fluctuations along sigma, so I'll just consider sigma here will map the, we'll just embed the world volume of this directly in a one-to-one map. And then finally, the radial coordinate will depend on time. And this is the resulting DBI action that I get at some quantum mechanical system. Here, this R cubed comes from the volume. This comes from the Ramon-Ramon 4 form. And then I get some V hat here is the volume in units. V hat here is, roughly speaking, the volume in units of the ADS radius of sigma. And F of R here is this factor, R squared over L squared minus 1, that appeared in the metric and indeed vanishes at the horizon. Any questions? Yeah, I'm not going to worry about Poisson-Klein mode. So those are gaps. And so, well, no, you can choose sigma so that there are no unstable Poisson-Klein modes. I'll mention later, there's a paper by Cornish, Spergel, and I'm forgetting the other author off the top of my head, which studied the spectrum of Laplacian on compact hyperbolic free manifold for their own design, for their own reasons. And there were certainly examples where only the zero mode was unstable. So at most, only a few Poisson-Klein modes are unstable. So I don't think that will change the picture that they're developing. No, no, we'll talk. I know that that's what I'm talking about, is exactly that conformal coupling. Yes, it's reflected. In fact, if I expand this out in small velocities, you'll see that instability. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You'll get an order of the fourth term, which is canceled by this, and then the next term is a negative mass squared term. So, yeah, absolutely. The out at infinity will look like a particle living in a simple inverted simple harmonic oscillator potential. Okay, so this DBI action is supposed to arise from the gauge theory. That's what the ADS-CFT correspondence tells us. And the way one would derive it is to start with the gauge theory, where T is the gauge theory time. I'm looking at the gauge theory at some finite temperature. I take an eigenvalue of the adjoint scalar out onto the Coulomb branch. The value of the scalar field, which has mass dimension 1, is just alpha time times the radial direction. I integrate out the W bosons, which are charged under the W bosons would stretch between this brain and the stack of n minus 1 brains, so they're charged under this product group, the unbroken product group. And then the resulting effective action for phi should just be the DBI action. Now that's been checked for in particular in the case of probes of black brains, where instead of having a hyperbolic horizon, I have a planar horizon. That's been checked at least for large values of phi by Meldesen and Fritzis, but it should follow from the ADS-CFT correspondence. So this DBI action should have indeed a gauge theory origin. That's just the main point, where I have a particular choice of gauge theory time. Okay, so let's just look a little bit at this DBI action and see what it does and what it tells us. Now, you'll notice here I have this square root. And when you study the dynamics of this theory, the dynamics will be such that the argument of the square root will never become negative. This was sometimes called the scalar speed limit. And it indeed results from the equations of motion. R dot squared, if I start with R dot squared less than F squared, it will remain less than F squared. And in particular, since F goes to zero at the horizon, it means that R dot will slow down. And indeed, if you look at the solution, see the equations of motion coming from this Lagrangian, it will take an infinite amount of time to reach the horizon. Furthermore, if I look at small fluctuations around a classical solution, and expand this effective action in these small fluctuations, that expansion breaks down quite badly as f goes to zero. So the semi-classical physics in these coordinate systems breaks down at the horizon. This is no longer near the horizon. This and probably there was a problem of using this as an effective action at all, because at this point the probe is going to be thermalizing with other degrees of freedom that I integrated out. Well, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that. So that's the point. Okay. So on the other hand, we can talk about n equals 4 super Yang-Mills theory on this collapsing cone. We can do the same thing, although here I will let the world volume time equal to the time scale on this cosmological slicing. I will consider the scalar field to be related to the radial direction in these Poincaré coordinates. And indeed, again, get this DBI action. And it seems reasonable to assume this is, well, this should indeed come from going out on the Coulomb branch and the gauge theory in these collapsing coordinates, setting the gauge theory time equal to Q sub p, integrating out the W bosons. The same process should give me this DBI action if I started in the collapsing cone metric. Okay, so let's look a little bit at the solution to the equations of motion of this Lagrangian. Here the horizon is at this point RP TP equals L squared. The singularity occurs as TP goes to zero. If you look at the solution to the equations of motion, indeed the horizon is reached in finite time and nothing really special goes on there. If I expand this out in small fluctuations as before, the expansion is perfectly well behaved at the horizon, but it breaks down quite badly at the singularity. One sign of this is I can think of TP cubed, which sits out in front of the whole Lagrangian, as a sort of effective H bar, and that effective H bar is an inverse effective H bar, which is going to infinity at the singularity. So this is perfect. I mean, it breaks down at the singularity, but it's certainly perfectly well behaved at the horizon. So let's talk about now how to transform between these two pictures. Well, one thing you can do is the conformal transformation that we talked about earlier. I change the time, and I'm going to call this new time variable that occurs under the conformal transformation T tilde for the time being. I do a conformal this maps the collapsing and I do a conformal transformation of the metric. This maps the collapsing cone to this static cylinder, where the base of the cylinder is the compact hyperbolic space. And since phi, which is the radial variable divided by alpha prime, is a dimension one field, I also have to rescale phi, and that corresponds to this rescaling of the radial coordinate. Okay, so this is a coordinate transformation here. But this is not the coordinate transformation that takes you to Schwarzschild variables. It's a different coordinate transformation. So in particular, it doesn't relate this DBI action to this DBI action. In fact, if I start with this DBI action and do the conformal transformation, I get something more complicated. This is r tilde dot plus r quantity squared. It's not even, unlike the DBI action in Schwarzschild coordinates, it's not time reversal invariant. It's also perfectly well behaved at the horizon. It's a conformal transformation that maps the cone to the cylinder, but it's not the, when I convert this to a coordinate transformation, this is not the coordinate transformation that maps Poincaré coordinates to Schwarzschild coordinates. So, and let's talk a bit about that. Yeah. Yeah, it's not surprising. thank you. So these coordinate transformations, they're not the coordinate transformations I talked about earlier, which were quite complicated. Yeah, those are the coordinate transformation that took Poincaré to Schwarzschild. This log, they're the same as r goes out to infinity, but in the interior they're not the same. And among other things, this kind of coordinate transformation doesn't change at all the equal time slices in the bulk. You do get a bulk metric, which is a bit more Eddington-Finkelstein-like. This is a bulk metric here. And so when I, indeed, when I take the DVI action, this DVI action, plug in this bulk metric and reduce where T tilde is now the gauge theory time, I get the same action I got in the previous page. So this is the wrong transformation to do, at least in terms of the variables of the D3 brain. The conformal transformation is not enough. Right.
Doesn't that correspond to some coordinate transformation in this
one? It corresponds to this one.
Well, suppose I don't believe you. Suppose I think it corresponds to the other coordinate transformation you wrote down before.
Well, let's talk about that other coordinate transformation from the gauge theory, because that coordinate transformation is a little strange from the point of view. So it's a bit more than
well, the coordinate
let me get there.
Is the thing in the ball.
Let me get there on the next. You're a little ahead of me. It does. It's just not covered by the Poincaré. This does exist. It's just that this blue part is what's covered by the Poincaré slice.
So even with an identification, you can parse the loop again.
Yeah. This is sort of like ingoing at a configuration work. Okay. So let's talk about the actual bulk coordinate transformations from the point of view of the dual quantum field theory.
Is there a unique one-to-one correspondence between conformal transformations this type on the boundary and coordinate transformations in the bulk?
There is not.
So why
is this not true? Conformal transformations in boundary always correspond to boundary from the prism. This is a theorem.
It corresponds to. Okay, so you can. I don't know that I can do a conformal transform something. Well.
There's a formula, right? There's not only.
Right.
So the boundary coefficients, of course, would fall off the faster.
That's right.
These are not clear. But all, let's say, val transformations in the boundary theory, there is.
So there's going to be an issue. There's going to be an issue at the end of the day of how you change your slicings in the bulk. That's really the central question. And so all I'm saying is that it looks like, you know, based on how I get these DVI actions. Based on how I get these DVI actions from the quantum field theory and the relation between the variables of the DVI action and bulk variables, there was at least a coordinate transformation that suggested. And what I'm saying is it's not sufficient.
I mean, the coordinate transformation that you wrote down, that you said was equal to this control transformation, you could have written out a different coordinate transformation.
Let's talk about another coordinate. What I'm going to claim now is that any coordinate transformation which really changes the slicing in a non-trivial way is going to be a bit more exotic. In particular, you can already see this here. These are the coordinate transformations that take you from the Poincaré slicing to the Schwarzschild slicing. So here's the equal time surfaces in Poincaré coordinates. Here's the equal time surfaces in Schwarzschild coordinates. And this maps the two between them. So in the quantum field theory, T and T sub P are quantum field theory times. R and R sub P are fluctuating quantum fields.
And the coordinate transformation I have to do is a field-dependent reparameterization of the time variable. So at least from the point of view of field theory, that's usually a little bit exotic, although we do something similar when we talk about gauge transformation for quantum input on fluctuations.
Theory, a unique conformal transformation.
No, it's not going to be a conformal transformation. Because if it goes at, if I have two transformations that look the same out of the boundary, it's going to be a little harder to decide what's going on. I think there's.
I would say it the other way around. So given a bulk coordinate transformation,
mm-hmm.
I would think that would correspond to a unique conformal transformation on the boundary.
It's a conformal
which would not be field dependent.
No. I disagree. Any slicing like this is going to have to mix the radial and time directions. I'm just talking about the dynamics of a D-brain probe. So these fields are supposed to correspond to positions of a D-brain probe. And to do this kind of transformation, you have to mix R and T, which is clear.
Let's forget the D-brain probe for a second. Okay.
That's all I'm talking. We can talk about the full field theory later. I'll talk about it later.
Oh, okay.
Focus on the D-brain probe right now. I want to focus on the D-brain probe right now. So at least from the point of view of the T-brain probe, I'm doing what looks like a fairly exotic transformation in the quantum mechanics, mixing T and R, where one is just the time direction, the other is the quantum field. And this is going to be generic to any non-trivial change of bulk equal times license. Because I'm going to have to change these time slicings in an R-dependent way. So this seems fairly exotic from the point of view of quantum field theory. The hint, to some degree, is here. We do a very similar thing when we change gauges when computing the density fluctuations produced by quantum fluctuations of the inflaton. Part of the point is that it has a reparameterization invariance. And so I'm going to implement this by adding a gauge invariance, particularly reparameterization invariance, and then fixing it in different ways. There's nothing actually exotic here. So I let T sub p, the time direction, and R sub p now depend on some world volume time. I replace the original gauge fixed DBI action by this covariant DBI action. Now, this is invariant under reparameterizations of tau. And it reduces from here to here if I just set T sub p equal to tau. I'm not working in static gauge anymore. The static gauge was something that would have, was, you know, if I picked a field theory, I picked a gauge, I computed the effective action, I got a particular DBI action, a particular gauge. So I'm just working with the DBI action directly. I can unfix this, I can add this reparameterization invariance, and then fix it in various ways. So I could fix TP equals tau and get this, or I can do this, which now looks like a simple field redefinition, and then fix to a different gauge, T equals tau, and I indeed get the DBI action, just as a result of the, it's, the point is the underlying, this underlying DBI action that I start with here is a manifestly invariant of reparameterizations. And so I go from here to here up to a constant term, which is related to a gauge transformation of the Ramon-Ramon field. So let's go back and talk a bit about the conformal transformation as opposed to this more complicated transformation. It's true that the conformal transformation, if I started with the field theory on this collapsing cone and did the conformal transformation, there's at least, there was, if I extend this in a trivial way to a coordinate transformation in the bulk, I get this coordinate system here. Out at infinity, it also seems to produce a field theory. Out at infinity, this metric is conformal to, again, the cylinder. So this conformal transformation does seem to produce a field theory living on sigma times r as it had better. It's a non-singular field theory in a non-singular space. But since the singularity in the collapsing cone is just mapped to infinity, but the natural time slicing that you might have deduced from the associated DBI action extends inside the horizon into the singularity. So these coordinates extend well beyond behind the horizon. The corresponding effective action, S tilde, is well behaved at the horizon. These are better variables to see behind the horizon. These are good variables to see behind the horizon. At least you can not worry so much about this singularity of the collapsing cone. But now I've got two different DBI actions, which seem to come from a gauge theory living on sigma times r. So the question is which arises from the QFT effective action on sigma times r, do both, what's the difference, what's the difference between these two presentations of the eigenvalue dynamics. But before doing that, let me push this a little farther and talk about this complicated field redefinition of the ungauged fixed variables. Also implies a change in the conjugate momenta and other quantum observables. So let's look at this. You can just compute the relation between the conjugate momenta of R tilde and T tilde and how they relate to the conjugate momenta of R and T. And up to a constant shift, which I can actually get rid of by gauge transformation of the Ramon-Ramon 4 form, you'll notice that the momenta conjugate to T tilde, which are the variables which see inside the horizon, the momenta conjugate to T are the same. But when I do either gauge fixing, P sub T tilde is just minus the Hamiltonian generating motion along T tilde. P sub T is minus the Hamiltonian generating motion along T. So these Hamiltonians are up to a constant, the relevant constant, actually equal. And it's essentially related to the fact that as I go out to infinity in either coordinate, the equal time slices are asymptotically identical. So I mention this because
I, and certainly a lot of people I've talked to in the past, assume that to describe infalling observables, you'd have to choose a different Hamiltonian to do that, some Hamiltonian that takes you along geodesics going into the interior. But you're not changing the Hamiltonian in this picture. You're changing the, you're just rescrambling quantum variables in some complicated way. So that at least was a surprise to us. Perhaps it shouldn't have been. OK, so let me conclude this section by talking a bit about the transformation of the full quantum field theory, which we don't quite understand yet, but we have some ideas about. So the Yang-Mills action is invariant under conformal transformations. And on the other hand, the effect of action which came from the Yang-Mills action seems is if the ADS-CFT correspondence is correct, these are not invariant under the same transformations. I consider these as just coming from the field theory. They're supposed to be effective actions for super Yang-Mills, so which one is right, or are they both right? And if so, how does that work? So to answer this, let's go back and look at how we computed the DBI action as an effective action of, say, a particular the gauge theory out on the Coulomb branch. Well, again, I picked a gauge theory time. I took an adjoint scalar out onto the Coulomb branch. I integrated out the W bosons, and I got an effective action. But this was very schematic. There's a particular step here that was hidden. So this sounds unambiguous. But there was, in fact, a hidden step here, which is that I have to fix gauge before I integrate out the W bosons. I have to choose a particular gauge to make sense out of the, and fix that gauge to make sense out of the path integral at all. And in fact, the functional form of the defective action depends on the gauge choice. If you're doing usually perturbative scattering amplitudes, it's only the sum of all the tree diagrams you get from the 1PI effective action, which has to be invariant. The effective actions can look very different. I don't think it has to do with that breaking of conformal invariants. That's a but yes, it's true. The conformal transformation will act on MW, but I don't think that's the problem. But it's not just about the conformal. The conformal transformation was a particular. It's basically just a redep parameterization of time and a simple field redefinition. That will never change the bulk slicing drastically. So regardless of whether we're talking about conformal transformation, the question is, what transformations change the bulk slicing? So I'm looking at two different slicings which look the same out of the boundary. And it's not clear which one comes. According to each slicing, I'll generate a different DBI action. And the question is, which DBI action comes from the underlying dynamics? See, at this point, the thing I'm I can talk about this transformation entirely at the level of mapping T and T tilde, which are just aren't related by conformal transformation, just by some horrendous field redefinition, horrendous field-dependent time reparameterization. The breaking of conformal invariants isn't the problem here. The problem is that I have to, I have two different. I just start with some field theory. I have two different DBI actions, both of which seem naturally to come from integrating out the W bosons. And the question is which one, because they both seem to come from a field theory living on this space. And so the question is which, what is there a canonical DBI action that I get from integrating out, going out in the Coulomb branch and integrating out the W bosons? And my, what I'm telling you is, in fact, is not a unique answer. In terms of the functional form of the DBI action, there's not a unique answer, because my choice of UN gauge will change that answer. Changing the gauge will change the answer. The effective action, what you're computing is the effective action, and that the functional form of the defective action depends on your gauge choice. Yes, I'm saying the effective action is not gauge invariant. It's only the amplitudes I build from the effective action which are gauge invariant. This is well known. If I change gauge from, say, Coulomb gauge to some other exotic gauge, the 1PI effective action will look different. And it's only when I sum over all the tree diagrams I get from the 1PI effective action that I get gauge invariant numbers. They're for the scattering amplitudes. It is absolutely true if I change gauge, I change the functional form of the effective action. This is just a basic point. It might be. Well, I'm choosing among other things, I'm choosing a particular background field, and that choice is going to be somewhat gauge invariant, because I'm choosing a particular eigenvalue. Certainly the effective action for that will not transform, will transform under choices of gauge. So the standard gauge for computing the DBI action is the background field gauge. It's something like Lorentz gauge. Here I take the gauge fields, the scalars, and everything else, split them between fluctuations and classical values, and then this setting this equal to zero is background field gauge. And this is the gauge implicit in when one computes the DBI action from string theory. Now, the point is that this gauge condition transforms under conformal transformations. It's not invariant. And in particular, it picks up a piece which is 2 over L times AT tilde. If I start, say, in the static coordinates and I do the conformal transformations, I pick up a gauge condition which, among other things, breaks T tilde reversal invariants, as, in fact, does this effective action. So it appears that part of the story here in choosing which effective action for some D-brain probe is going to involve a choice of gauge. Of the boundary theory. Conformal transformation of the Yang-Mills. And this is actually not a new story. So the proposal is that the DBI action of the D3 brain probe in static coordinates is the effective action for super Yang-Mills on sigma times R in background field gauge. S tilde is the effective action in this gauge, and the full set of 5D coordinate transformations acting on D-brain probes should be related in some way to Yang-Mills gauge transformations. So, that seems to be the best answer we have for this choice one seems to have as to the action of the D-brain probe. This is actually not a totally new story. If you study special conformal transformations acting on n equals 4 Yang-Mills, the usual spectral conformal the DBI action is not invariant under the usual spectral conformal transformations. You have to add to the special conformal transformation a field-dependent piece to get a symmetry which is invariant of the DBI action. That's something that Juan pointed out. And so the question is, Yevichki, Kozama, and Yonea asked, again, why is this true? Why does the DBI action, which is an effective action, coming from the gauge theory, not invariant under the original special conformal transformation? And they found, indeed, that, again, the background field gauge is not invariant under the special conformal transformation. And the compensating gauge transformation actually gives you this extra piece in the special conformal transformation. So this it's a closely related story. OK, so I'm running out of time, but I'll say a little bit more generally about these topological black holes and the whole family of them. But are there any questions before I do that? Because that was sort of the hardest bit.
I mean, once you've constructed this correspondence, it sounds like an interesting question to ask is what happens to the DBI action when you get close to the singularity and that?
That's what we're thinking about now. Yeah, that's, I mean, I think it's going to be hard because, as I'll argue, this has to do with the strong infrared dynamics. So if the DBI action breaks down and you need to start thinking about all the W. The DBI action comes from integrating stuff out that will get excited near the singularity. So actually, it'll be a little clearer once I talk about the formation of these black holes first. So I'll just talk briefly about these black holes.
Sorry, can I ask you another question? I'm not sure I understood the takeaway message here. So if I just started with the full field theory, then we wouldn't have necessarily had to do anything complicated because this coordinate transformation involved is just a non-field dependent transformation on the boundary. But I think
No, I'm saying if the ordinary transformation is a field dependent reparametrization of the boundary, if I think of the actions of a D-ring probe.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. So it sounds like the takeaway message is, you know, once we're focusing on a subset of degrees of freedom in the field theory, there's sort of a preferred way of integrating things out so that the effective action doesn't go crazy when the thing crosses the horizon.
That's right. So let's go back and look at solutions to five-dimensional supergravity with the negative cosmological constant. There's a whole class which has this form where f of r looks, this is r squared over r squared plus k minus mu over r squared. Mu is g newton times some mass parameter. And k is correlated with the, this is a metric on a three manifold of constant curvature, and k is correlated with the curvature. So when k is 1, this is a three sphere, and these are just the family of ABS Schwarzschild manifolds. When k is 0, this is just the near horizon limit of black B three grains. And when k is minus 1, this segment is negatively curved space. It can be H3 mod gamma. Gamma could be trivial. And these are what are called topological black holes. So they look somewhat similar to the usual ABS black holes, except that their horizon is negatively curved. Also, unlike the usual ADS black holes, they have a sort of rich behavior of the causal structure as I vary the mass. Mu is just the mass times the Planck field cubed. When mu is less than some extremal value which is negative, the solution has a naked singularity, and it's a naked singularity of a bad kind. It looks very similar to the singularity of a negative mass Schwarzschild solution. And if flat spaces to be stable, Horowitz and Myers have argued that that should be this kind of singularity should be forbidden. And we'll talk a bit about how that might be, how the gauge theory might screen it. When mu is equal to this negative extremal value that should be minus L squared over R, the spacetime looks a lot like extremal Reisner-Nordström. The horizons here, f of R, is a double zero. The horizons are at infinite distance. The solution has zero temperature but finite entropy. The horizon area is finite, and the entropy is of order, I'm not sure what that's supposed to be, the entropy is of order n squared, L cubed, the ADS radius divided by the radius of curvature divided by Newton's constant. When mu is negative but still larger than an extremal parameter, I get a spacetime that looks a lot like Reisner-Nordström black holes. These have a finite temperature and an outer and an inner horizon, and the inner horizon is unstable to perturbations, becoming singular. At mu equals zero, I get the black hole we talked about in the previous slide. It's essentially a higher dimensional analog of the BTZ black hole, the same as in question that we talked about before. It's locally equivalent to, it locally looks like ADS. The singularity is of orbifold type. The mass appears to be zero, but the temperature is finite. And finally, I can keep cranking up the temperature, and I get something that looks a lot more like an ADS Schwarzschild black hole. As written earlier, the singularity is now a curvature singularity in Schwarzschild. Hyperbolic celestial slices go to zero volume there. And then it's interesting what may happen, for example, if although this singularity is velocity dominated under like what we've studied previous paper, it's possible that this corresponds to some huge increase in the number of degrees of freedom. But we don't know. That's a question we will want to ask. So those are the kinds of black holes you can see. All of these have the boundary has the asymptotic structure being sigma times r. So you might expect that these are states of the gauge theory at sigma r at times r at finite temperature. So to talk about that, let's look at the Lagrangian for the adjoint scalars in this n equals 4 Yang-Mills on this background. And this Lagrangian for the scalars includes a curvature coupling. So I'm going to consider nd three brains smeared over the S5 at a coincident radial position. So it'll be dual to some scalar zero mode. And because of the negative curvature, the zero modes of phi and of this zero mode in particular are unstable. Generically, only a small number of momentum modes are unstable, as pointed out by Cornu, Spergel, and Starkman. But there are compact manifolds which exist so that only the zero mode is unstable. So we'll focus on that. Make our life easier. We can look at the quantum mechanics of this. For large phi, there's no corrections from integrating out the W bosons, and it looks a lot like the Lagrangian for the classical Lagrangian looks like the Lagrangian for upside down symbol harmonic oscillator. It takes an infinite amount of time to get out to infinity.
There's a continuum spectrum and no ground state, but the quantum mechanics is non-singular. Any finite time, if I take any normalizable state and evolve it forward over a finite time, it will evolve to another normalizable state, and you can compute transition amplitudes as you like, and we'll get unambiguous answers. And again, this is all the higher momentum modes, all the W bosons, and everything else don't suffer from this instability. So you just have to worry about the state of the theorem. The corrections won't, because they'll essentially go as 1 over phi, higher powers of 1 over phi, because they come from integrating out W bosons whose mass goes as phi. So we can ask now about quantum corrections, which happen as phi gets small and as phi starts moving in towards the center. You'll get loops of W bosons, which start kicking in when lambda phi dot over phi squared is of order 1. W bosons themselves will be produced as the W boson mass changes in time. And you can also get loops in production of these other modes as phi gets small, KK modes, Wilson lines on sigma, which has some complicated homotopy group, flux tubes, and so forth. But this first thing is what's going to be, this is what's going to become important first as phi evolves out from infinity. Focus on that. Okay, so now we can ask about quantum correct. So here's the potential. Here are various candidate histories of the scalar field. If I look, and I can look at this at various energies, and if the energy is less than this extremal energy, which is in fact mu x divided by g Newton, the scalar will, I can look at a classical solution, and I'll find that the scalar bounces before any of these corrections become important. So these are energies in the range where the bulk would have a naked singularity. As I crank up the energy, the DBI actions start kicking in before the bounce. In fact, this object here becomes of order 1 precisely when alpha prime times phi is of order the horizon radius. For a black hole whose mass is equal to this energy. And I expect W loops at this point to start slowing down the evolution of the scalar field. Up here, again, I get the same thing. And in particular, these corrections kick in well before the origin is ever reached. If I didn't have this correction, the scalar field would scale on through, and the spacetime would look a lot like a bounce. But I don't get anything like that. Things seem to slow down here. QFT modes will get produced, and the scalar field should get trapped. Right. So I can look at, so this is supposed to correspond to some collapsing spherical shell of D3 brains in the bulk. And roughly speaking, they should look like this. For energies less than the extremal, I thought I had this naked singularity, but this shell screens the cosmological constant, and it seems reasonable. We don't have a solution yet, but our belief is that it actually just excises the singularity along the lines of the enhancement mechanism. So field theory gets rid of this. The only way to reduce the energy, this is to reduce the energy in the scalar field sector, and therefore screen this out. We don't know this trajectory at all. But if indeed the scalar field passes to the inner horizon, we'll probably get some instability. We don't know what goes on. And finally, this trajectory should create a Schwarzschild black hole with a spacetime singularity corresponding to the stalling of the scalar field at the origin and the thermalization of all the other degrees of freedom. Once I start exciting the W boson, that will trap the three brains near the origin, because to remove the three brains from the origin means making the W bosons massive. The late time behavior is more complicated, in particular for these positive mass black holes. For these positive mass black holes, once I go into the origin and start exciting all the degrees of freedom, this effectively thermalizes, and I therefore expect some trapping potential near the origin, and the brains are going to want to sit here. On the other hand, as I take the scalar field out to large values, the W boson loops don't give you much, and so I expect that the potential will fall off, and there should be an instability for the brains to escape, a non-perturbative instability for the brains to escape the origin. So these black holes will start emitting brains and sort of decharging themselves. And then you're left with some gunk in flat space, and that gunk should evaporate like a standard black hole. Time scale for this to happen is long. The DBI action scales as n in the field theory. The emission time for a single two-brain goes as e to the n. This is shorter than the recurrence time in ADS Schwarzschild, Poincaré recurrence time in ADS Schwarzschild black hole. they're much larger than the lifetime of a small black hole. Over the long run, the N brains are emitted incoherently over a very large time scale. So these are the kinds of spacetimes we might expect. You're forming this black hole by a spherical shell of brains, and the brains are emitted, so you can either have this classical diagram of a evaporating black hole, or also the Spencer suggestion that I just get some non-geometric regions here, which are accessible to future observers, and the brains just sort of emit themselves from this non-geometric region. In this picture, unitarity is going to demand that you can't continue past the singularity. This looks a bit more like a bounce, but it's not any kind of simple bounce, since the brains aren't emitted, and the brains are sort of emitted quantum mechanically at random times. It's not actually clear to me that these two pictures are totally distinct. But anyway, those are pictures one might be tempted to draw. This is a black hole which evaporates, looks like a black hole and evaporates in some way. So I'm just running out of time, so I'll conclude. The lessons first are that there's some relation between bulk coordinate transformations and boundary gauge transformations. That Schwarzschilded infalling observers can be described by the same Hamiltonian with different variables, so this change of description smells off a lot like a duality as we understand them. The physics is well defined at the singularities in these examples. It's just the strong interaction of the field theory near the origin. It's just hard to study, as you might expect. There's no sign, at least in this, of a cosmological bounce, although it's been argued that these are the wrong systems to describe cosmologies. We'll leave that for arguments afterwards. There's some distances, again, from previous work. Singularity is associated with the origin of field space here in the infrared rather than infinity. And the singularity appears even in variables for which the quantum field theory is completely static. So I don't need to go to some funny time-dependent gauge theory to study them. And so I'll just mention some things we might do in the future. One is to try and understand better the relation to work, which is try to probe the thermofield double correlators to probe the singularity. In particular, Liu and Festucci related these to correlators. Two-point functions continued into complex frequencies, and the singularity is a feature at large imaginary frequency. And it'd be interesting to know how that relates to what we've seen here. Another question is, can we understand the distinction between the horizon in one set of coordinates and the singularity in the other? We can map each other in some way. Can we understand better the transformation of the full gauge theory, perhaps by studying under the approach? Can we study negative mass black holes? The source of the n-state ground state, order n squared ground state entropy, from the field theory point of view, is something of a mystery to us. We've had a plausible example. We had a plausible answer and mathematically guess that it was the space of slack connections on sigma, but at least according to Sergei Lukov, that was you would order n entropy. There's also a question about coordinate transformations for other black holes when n is not zero, or when I'm looking at spherical or planar black holes. There are Eddington-Finkelstein coordinates for all those, so presumably that transforming from Schwarzschild to those coordinates should allow us to see the cycle of neurons there. I'm going to stop.
So in the field theory, you had these two pictures at the beginning, one where there was a singularity at finite time, and one where it was at infinite time.
I think in some sense what looks like a finite time singularity is really an infinite time singularity. It's sort of if you use this argument is probably a badly remembered argument that I learned from that. But if you look at things moving around the compact slice, if you go to zero, you'll still move an infinite number of times around that slice. So there's a natural clocks that you design run to infinity as the compact spatial slice goes to zero. So I think the singularity, apparent singularity, is sort of a red herring. It's really just a reflection of the fact that it's a conformal transformation of a highly singular conformal transformation of the input. So on.
Could you just expand on your last comment that those two may not be physically distinct, those two pictures?
You're talking about a highly strongly defined here. Whether you're talking about this region here, just as the black hole finally evaporates, and this region here, you're talking about a highly curved space-time where this is the idea of drawing a space-time diagram is how we do this.
So, and as always, distances in Penrose diagrams are deceptive. So I'm being as agnostic as I can be. I don't totally understand if I asked any physical questions what the difference is between these.
Maybe there's a difference.
I just don't make significant differences.
But mean parity is preserved in both, right?
I believe the system should be unitary. Certainly the natural gauge theory descriptions are completely unitary. The only thing I'm saying is I don't expect information to escape past here and be inaccessible to the observer in the future. So either I have the singular English ends, or this is just a region that I can small like this. But yeah, so I just things get so strongly curved, I'm not really sure which is the right diagram to draw, or if it makes sense.
Any other questions? If not, let's meet at 4 and this time.